Street here in 1952 at the Grace Hospital. The hospital's not there anymore.
And tell me about your family.
Well, my mom and dad, my dad was a sometime fiddle player, and he played a little bit of bluegrass too, and there's a difference between, you know, bluegrass fiddle and old time fiddle, but he's primarily an old time fiddle player, and mom was a homemaker, and I'm probably the most thrifty person I ever met in my life, and I had four siblings. I had one brother and three sisters, and two of my sisters have died, and I'm the baby of the family. And so we was, my dad was a coal miner, and up until he had a lung taken out in the 60s, and then he was actually ready to go back in the mines.
Did he have a black lung?
Yeah, he had a black lung and silicosis. And they found a spot on his lung back in the 60s. I don't know if it was cancer, I couldn't tell. I don't know if they even knew, but they took his lung out. And so then after that, he never did go back in the mines.
And what were their names?
Daddy's name was Raymond Johnson, and mom's name was Hazel. She was in England before she married my dad.
Do you remember him playing with
other
folks?
Yeah, they dad played with them back in the my earliest remembrance of my dad playing was back in the early 50s. He played with another local entertainer from around here named Keisha Surratt. And they played places like the Healing Jamboree. And then they had a television show on the, again it was WHIS television in Bluefield. Later became WVDA. But then at that time was WHIS. And they had something on there called RFD Jamboree or something like that. And it came on once a week. And I remember going there with my dad. And he played fiddle up there on that television show.
Do you know how to learn?
What's that?
Do you know how to learn to play?
Well, he loved from his mother was a musician. I can't remember. They both were, his dad had passed away before I was born, so I don't know. I can't remember if he played or not, but it seemed like they said he did. But his mother played an old Paul Hammer-style banjo, and my dad took up fiddle when he was four. So I don't know, he was really, really a good fiddle player. He won ribbons, you know, in the conventions they had around here, the fiddler conventions. He had ribbons that he'd won playing the fiddle.
What do you know what the convention
was? There was one at the Glenwood Park. I remember in particular that he won. He won second place at the whole time fiddler. And then he was invited to play at the John Henry Folk Festival. And this was all later on in his later years in his life. He was invited to play at the John Henry Folk Fest, and he did something with Vandalia.
I think
he played there. And I'd love to know what happened to him, but there was a couple of guys that came to my dad's house. One's name was George Jarvis.
Okay.
He was a local artist here. He painted. And the other guy's name was Francis Pendleton. And they came and they recorded my dad, and they were working through some organization out of Charleston. And they made several recordings of my dad playing the fiddle and the old Paul Hammer style banjo. And they took them back and they submitted them to somebody. I'd love to know whatever happened to those. I'd be good to know what I'd love to hear them. I hardly know where to begin. I don't know what to ask. player was had, who did this thing really, really well with his left hand. His noting here, he did these things called hammer ons and pull offs. And part of the melody that he got out of playing Paul Hammer Banjo was with his left hand doing hammer ons and pull offs. Mm-hmm. And he did that better than any other banjo player I've heard. He just had a knack for that. Her name was Clara. She was a Blankenship before she married into the Johnson family. Well, her mother was a Klein, and she lived on the Gilbert Street. And my mother had, I don't know what became of it, my mother, at one time she had a newspaper clipping of her playing the fiddle. And it came out of a newspaper like back in the 30s or 40s or something. And I believe her married name was Addington, but I can't remember for sure. I could look it up. I did find a place to look that stuff up. But that's where that was handed down all the way through that, I guess, the Klein. And of course, the Kleins are a well-noted musical family from down on Gilbert Street. Ezra Klein, cousin Ezra Klein, and one of the bluegrass pickers, Bobby Osmond, married one of their daughters. So then all kinds of, and Curly Ray Klein, he played the fiddle for Ralph Stanley. So Kleins, there's a lot of Kleins and musicians from down on Gilbert Street, and my dad was kin to that family. He played old tunes like Cricket on the Hearth, and he called it Hell Amongst the Yearlings. He played that, but he said people didn't want to use that word, would say trouble amongst the yearlings, but he called it Hell Amongst the Yearlings. He loved to do a hornpipe. That was one of his favorite things. If there was a new hornpipe that he'd hear, then he'd sit down, he'd learn it, and he'd play until he could play that hornpipe. So he loved to do a devil's hornpipe, and that's how I learned how to play, following along behind him, on the guitar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are, but he could really play them well. When I was 12 years old, they bought me a guitar for Christmas. And that's when I started playing. I found it just never did look back.
So after that, did you start playing with people?
Well, I started playing. The first paying job I ever got was in Bradshaw, West Virginia, here in McDowell County. I was at theater, had a movie theater down in Bradshaw, and they, after the movie on the Saturday afternoon, the last movie they showed, then they turned the house lights up and did a country music show in there on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And so that was the first paying gig I ever did. I did it with my dad's band, and he played, at the time, he was a constable in that guy's town. His name was Archie Day. And Archie always had a band together. And that's who my daddy played with, well, in about the mid-60s. And that's when I started playing. I played some with them. And then, of course, going to school like I did, I got with other musicians during school, and we got a little rock and roll band that started. We started, and then I started doing that. I'll be 1967, 68. And then we started, then after the year I graduated, I started the band. And this was my first really what I would call my band. And we called ourselves the Country Four. Bluefield, WHIS at the time, and the Mel Street had a show up there called Country Showcase. So we went up there and auditioned to make a guest appearance on his television show. And there's a little funny story about that kind of that surrounds that story. We were sitting at a traffic light, and the light turned red before we got through it. And the guy that was driving the car, our guitar player, Randall Burks, he decided he better not go on through that light, so he backed up. Mm-hmm. And when he backed up into a Cadillac. And bam, and we got out and looked, and it was Mel Street. It was the guy that we was on the way to the TV station to audition, but he took it all in stride, and he was real good-natured about it. But anyway, I started, so we got on that show a couple of times, and then Mel's bass player quit, and Mel contacted me and asked me would I come play bass for him. I didn't want to at the time, because I had my own band, and then one night we were supposed to play, there was a pizza place here in Welch called Billy Boy's. We were supposed to play, and a couple of them didn't even show. And I got frustrated, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go up there and play with Mel Street. He asked me to play, I'm going to go see if the offer still stands. And it just so happened they were taping that night. I went up there and he said, sure. So I played with Mel Street for probably 4 years as his bass player. And the band was called the Swing Kings. There's been a lot of different people come and went out of the Swing Kings, you know. But they held on to that name, the Swing Kings, all down through the years. No, it really wasn't. I don't know exactly how it started. My daddy used to call. He didn't classify it as bluegrass music or country music. He called it strang music. And he'd say, he bought me a little transistor radio and he told me a station to listen to in Cincinnati. It's WCKY. And the DJ's name was Wayne Rainey. And he said, if you want to hear some good strang music, he called it strang music, you'd listen to WCKY and you hear some good strang music. I can't remember. But he was a DJ on that WCKY. And so anyway, that's where we were at. What was I saying? Yeah, I played with him for about 4 years, I'd say. And then he went, he had a couple of big number ones. I mean, well, I think one of them reached number two on the Billboard chart in the United States. His first big hit was Borrowed Angel, who came into the top 10. And then he started going way out, you know, places like Savannah, Georgia, and playing places down in Florida and stuff. And so I went to a few of those places with him. But he wasn't really big enough yet to carry a band. He couldn't have his own band, you know. So he had to be pretty successful to maintain a road band. But every chance that I got, I did go with him. And we went to a lot of places. And then finally, he did get to where he got a band. He came back and asked me in about probably 1976 or 77 to go with him. He thought that I would just jump all over it because in 1972 I was gung-ho, ready to go. But by the time that 1977 rolled around, I had a family, had a wife, and had a baby. And I just thought, no, I don't want to do that anymore. And so I actually turned him down when he offered me that job in 77. I couldn't believe I did that, but I didn't want to do it anymore. I never did really do it full time. It was just a time thing. music back then to, it became part of my budget, you know, part of my, without it, you know, it was really, I depended upon the money that I made playing music to raise my family. So I guess you would call it semi-professional, you know, but I still had a day job. I've done everything just about in my day job. I've done roofing, installed furnaces, I've sold insurance, I taught school, Christian school, I was a maintenance supervisor at the hospital, I was assistant manager in the grocery store, I worked on pinball machines, worked on juke boxes and pool tables. So I've done a lot of stuff. And then Donnie Dorn, who was our drummer, he announced this one night that he didn't want to play anymore. He just didn't want to play anymore music. And so we just all looked at each other, and then one of the other guys stepped forward and said, "Well, I quit too, man. I'm not going to play anymore either." So that was like a New Year's Eve night. And so I thought, well, I gotta play. If I don't play, I'll explode. I got to send me, I've got to come out. And so by February of 1977, I already had another band, and I called it Fancy Free Band. And so I'm just, I don't know, it was about a month where I went without actually playing gigs, and then by the time February rolled around, I was rolling again. And we kept that band together until 1980. Then I ceased to play with that band. I didn't want to do that anymore. For one thing, I got real busy at church, and it was interfering with my. I didn't want to ruin my witness. For one thing, I didn't want to go to church Sunday morning, and somebody said, "Didn't I see you coming out of Moose Lodge last night?" And I thought, that's not worth that. I don't want anything to do with that. So I just lost interest in it. I went from 1980 until probably 2004 and didn't play any. I belong to a Mount Top Baptist church. I figured you don't have to be a Baptist to go to heaven, but I thought, why not go first class?
So then 2004, you decided to start playing again?
Yeah. But I knew then that I would never go back into the club or anything again. I had no desire ever to do that. So I kind of set a standard for myself. If it's somewhere I can't take my grandchildren, then I don't need to be there either. So that's kind of the standard I set when I'm choosing a place to play. I say, well, can I take my grandchildren? And they say, no, you can't bring them. And I say, well, I won't be there. I'm not going to play.
And where were you playing before? Moose Lodge?
Yeah, and Moose Lodge. We had one steady gig from the time I started playing with swing teams in 72 up until 1977, we played at a place in Bluefield called the City Auditorium. And they had a dance in there every Saturday night. And we alternated with another band. We played one Saturday, they played. And then everything in between, then we booked other places like Moose Lodge, and we played the Elks Clubs and the Eagles Clubs. Places, I said, you know, just bars and stuff. I never want to ever do that again.
Was that the first
dance? It was just everything. We played anything from then. I don't know how they are now, but at, during that time, they liked their poker. So you'd have to play some poker, and they'd even want a square dance, so you'd play something for a square dance. And then you had a group there that wanted to hear some hard rock and roll music, so you played some Ted Nugent, and you had to be kind of rare. You know, I played in a kind of band at that time. Like one weekend we played at a high school prom, and then the next weekend we played at the New Slide. You know, go from teenagers to, you know, no limit on the age. We're playing mostly. I play live shows here, you know, like we've been playing the county fair, play a lot of street fairs. They had one in the Bradshaw, had one in the War, and they've had some festivals here as well that we played, and just live stage stuff, that's kind of stuff we've been doing. We started off back in probably 2004, 2005, and we called it the McDowell County Project, and then we decided to change the name to South 52. That was in about 2006, and we played all bluegrass. We didn't have an electric instrument in the band, and we played, you know, banjo, dobro, had fiddle player. I played upright bass, and then we decided a little over a year ago to add a drummer and bring an electric. Now we're doing like classic country and classic rock and roll stuff out of the 60s and 70s. And then somebody wants to hear some bluegrass, we'll do that for them too.
Was Donnie, who plays with Donnie
Dillon?
Is he related to Melvin's
brother? Melvin and Ray's brother. And the whole crew of them.
Yeah. And Melvin is still around, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and Melvin and the ones in Windy Mountain. His name of his group is Windy Mountain, I think.
Okay.
We had, I think it was in 2006, they had a Channel 6, they called it Legends Reunion, up at the Brush Full Farm in Bluefield, and he and Ray were there. That's the last time I ever saw Ray, and they played at that, and there was a lot of people. That's the last time I also saw Pizza Surratt. And what they did is they had a thing for all the people that had at one time played on Channel 6 TV in Blueville and had a reunion show for them. And there were a lot of people up there. There was a lady that sung up in there, Boots Collins. She was there. And Eleanor Parker. She was there. Yeah, last I heard, she's still alive. Her husband was Rex, and he passed on. And then Eleanor had a couple of her daughters with her up there at that Legend thing. But now that's 10 years ago, so I don't know what happened since then.
Yeah, I was wondering if she was still
I remember when they were on television, had a regular television show, Rex and Eleanor Parker.
Oh, yeah.
No, there was a guy, he was the engineer, his name was Harry, and I can't remember his last name, but he had some tapes at home, and I used to see him at Walmart in Bluefield years ago, and I'd go in and he'd be in there sitting and drinking coffee or something. They had a snack bar or something there at that time, but station called the Hardorama. Mm-hmm. And we played for that every year. Or Calorama. They called it Calorama, I'm sorry. The Hardorama was open in this game. But they had a Calorama, and they did it for, I believe, March of 9.
Okay.
Fundraiser. And we played for that every year. And he had some of our performances on the VHS. Oh. He said somebody borrowed it from him to make a copy, and then gave him the copy and kept the original, and then the copy was substandard. They did it like at a slower speed or something, and they hebrewed him on that one. But I don't know if he still got that or not. I'm not sure, though.
Did you ever write your own song?
Yeah, I have written several songs, and I've had some, unless you're a bluegrass fan, you probably never heard of the people, but I've had had a handful of bluegrass acts record some of my songs, and probably one of the most notable ones is Dale McCurry. He recorded one called Sweet Appalachia.
Okay.
It's on the Family Circle album. Don Rigsby, he's recorded a couple of my songs, and a guy named David Davis and the Warrior River Boys. He's recorded probably 8 or 9 of my songs. And there's a guy named Tommy Webb over in Kentucky. He recorded one of my songs. I know I'm leaving somebody out. Brand New Strings group out of East Tennessee. They did one of my songs. And then most recently, it's not been released yet, but a guy down in the Virginia named Jeff Brown, and he's got a band called Still Lonesome. He recorded probably the last song that I wrote, but he recorded it, and it should be out just any time now.
Met
who?
Dallas.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I'd like to meet him. I met his son, who plays at IBMA. My daughter is she's trying to break into, music, and she had a showcase at IBMA, and so I met his son was walking through the hall down there in one of those hotels where we were just playing at Nashville, and I recognized him, and I said to Rob McCoy, right? He said, right, McCurry, however you say it, and I said, y'all recorded one of my songs this month. He said, oh, really? I said, yeah, and I told him the song. He said, well, I won't say what he said. It's the curse word. And I said, he said, you wrote that. I said, yeah. He said, good song.
So have you recorded that?
Just at home recordings. I got a little thing that sits on top of the table about that big, and it's a multi-track recorder, and so we recorded a CD, but we did it right there at the house, mixed it at the house, printed it at the house, everything we did it right there at the house on the computer, and that's a tabletop mixer. Well, I had a friend who was also a publisher for my songs. His name's H.R. Cook. He just all the time pitching the song, pitching the song, sending the song. And a lot of times, he would call me and say, so-and-so's thinking about recording your song. He's listening to it. He's thinking about it, And I said, well, that's cool. I hope he does. But they weren't different with Dale McCurry. He done recorded it. And he had already recorded it, and it was coming out the next day. So I didn't, it wasn't a waiting game for me to find out. He just, and then his bass player, I was friends with him through a message board for bass players. And then he just so happened to send me a message and say, I think we recorded one of your songs. And I said, really? And so I found out about the same day that it was released that he'd recorded my song. And then had a song posted called Merry-Go-Round on the, and actually I believe it was MySpace at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm going to listen to that and see how it stacks up against my song that I wrote called Merry-Go-Round. And I was listening to it, and then I listened to the kickoff, and I said, that sounds, you know, that would work actually on my song, you know, Merry-Go-Round. And then I listened to it. The guy started singing. I said, that's my song. And they recorded my song like that before I found out they were going to record it.
What?
I was just like, I got on the phone. I called my publisher. I said, man, I said, there's somebody on my face ripped my song off. But they didn't rip it off. They did everything just exactly the way it is. But I didn't know that they were going to record it. And they just taught me, that's a crazy way to hear your song.
So what is your daughter, what's her name, and what is she, where does she live, and where is she from?
Her name's Stacy Grubb. And she lives in Beaver right now, Beaver, West Virginia. And she went to Nashville, I can't remember the year now, but she went down there and trying to make a long story short, she recorded a project down there at Hilltop Recording Studio, and she had, I'm talking about the big names on her CD, she had Ron Block played banjo. Ron Block played banjo for Alison Krauss. And she had a guy named Aubrey Haney on the fiddle and mandolin. And Rob Ike played the dobro. And these are all big names in bluegrass. And a guitar player. Now, I have to admit, at the time, I never heard of him. But after I got home, I Googled his name, and the man is the one Grammys after Grammy, and the most sought after guitar player in Nashville, and his name is Brent Mason. He played on her project, and then we have some friends. They've been hugely successful in bluegrass music, Bailey and Vincent, and they came and recorded some harmony on one of the songs, and she did three of my songs on that project, and I played bass on three tracks. Well, she did two of my songs. She did two of my songs, and I played bass on three tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it was kind of the guy that played bass for Mel Street that I replaced, his name is Ronnie Cochran, and he's the one that produced that album. And he didn't produce that album as a bluegrass. And it had drums and the electric guitar and all that stuff in it. But it also had banjo and the, you know, dobro. And it was a really nice mix of music. And real string orchestra. You got an orchestra to come in and do some, on three or four songs. It's an extremely impressive project. But it's called, and she called it Hurricane, actually, but that was the title. That was one of the songs that she did on there that I wrote.
And is she still playing that album?
Well, she, yes and no. She just had a baby this month.
Wow.
So she's been pretty tied up with that.
Yeah.
But she played in my group for a long time, sang in my group, but she didn't want to be tied down to that. She wanted to do things her way and then do her own thing. So that's what she didn't do. She just let me know that she was going to try to do things herself. And she's the one, she got booked down at the Wheeling Jamboree.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's a member of the Wheeling Jamboree. Now she got inducted into the membership of the Wheeling Jamboree. Well, it was about the year 2010. We were down there, and she got us to go down there and back her up and accompany her at the Wheeling Jamboree. And one of my other daughters named Jessie. And so we went down there to help her and accompany her, and it was a real nostalgic moment because we were there, and 60 years prior to that, to the year my dad was at the Wheeling Jamboree playing the people for that, and so it was a real good moment for us because there I am performing at the Wheeling Jamboree with my two daughters, two of my daughters, and then that's like about 6 years ago my dad was doing this right here. Wasn't on the same stage, but it was still the same venue, you know what I mean, same thing, Wheeling Jamboree. So we met, you know, that was real, that was a proud moment for me. Most recently got up with a guy named, I don't know if you ever heard of him or not. He won a Grammy. His name is Clay Hess. And he's got a band called the Clay Hess Band. He played music with Mountain Hearts.
Okay.
He was a guitar player for Mountain Hearts. And then he played with some of Ron Block and Sierra Ho. He's another one. He's trying to do his own thing, you know. He's just to play his band.
Mm-hmm.
And so she got kind of tied in with him a little bit, and they did a lot of things together. Played down at the Outer Banks, some kind of festival down at the Outer Banks.
And
yeah, she lives up in Beaver.
Yeah. Is Clay?
No, he lives in Ohio, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really, it's not like I'd like for it to be. We don't, there's nothing really, like interacting between bands and stuff. If that goes on, I'm not aware of it. So that would be nice, you know, to be have a band here and a band here, two or three, four or five bands here in the county, and all of us kind of interact and do this, but that doesn't go on that I know of.
Do you think, are there enough places to play here? Has it changed or anything?
I don't think there's not. We can do, my friend and I, Charlie Davis, I played with him for years and years. And he and I had done several things here recently, just us two. I take guitar, and then he brings the banjo and dobro. And we've been performing for, there's a commission group that comes in up in Elkhorn. It's a place called SWAP. I believe it stands for Sharing with Appalachian People.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a Mennonite group, and they come in, there's a great big boarding house up at Elkhorn, and they come in there sometimes 20 or 30 of them, and they do things and do work here for people in Gow County. And so while they're here, Charlie and I have gone up there probably a dozen times or more and performed for them. And then most recently, less than 2 weeks ago, we went up to Mountain View High School and performed for the middle school, the whole middle school up there, because part of I got a friend that teaches up there, and he's wanting his students to learn about music and try to appreciate music. So we went up there and we sang and played for about 30 minutes, and we had a question and answer period. So I thought they just all sit there and look at each other, you know, when they, but man, they fired in questions off. They was begging for the mic.
What were they asking?
They was asking stuff like, what made you interested in wanting to learn how to play music, and the real intelligent questions, you know, and really, it surprised me, you know. And they were good questions. And then Charlie, worked in the coal mines for 25 years, so I said to him, I must ask Charlie anything about working in the coal mines, you know, and some of them asked him, you know, what was it like, you know, down in the mine and all that stuff, and they, why, you know, they, we ran out of time before we ran out of questions. I don't believe everybody got to ask, you know, the questions, but surprised me, and I really enjoyed that. Could be, and I wouldn't know it, but I, if they are, I don't, there's a few, my wife's nephew, he plays music, and maybe a couple more, but I'm not real aware of it.
Other, can you think of other musicians, or people in the area who like to talk to, who are, you know, playing old-time bluegrass, country music, blues?
You mean that live here?
Yeah.
Just people that probably that I had played with in the past. You know, I'm still in touch. We had a girl that played the banjo, and her husband played the guitar, and they moved off down into Virginia. And we still keep in touch through Facebook, mm-hmm. And I can see what they're doing. You know, they post things on Facebook, like videos that they made with people that they're jamming with down there, and I can see that. I couldn't name one old time or bluegrass band around here right now. I really don't. There was another one. My friend Barry Clevenger, lived in Yeager. But he moved to North Carolina, so that all busted mm-hmm. up. And they called us a second generation.
Okay.
And that's not around anymore. So I can't even think of a bluegrass or acoustic music band right now around here. I don't know of one.
What about
There's a band called The County that I know of that's here local. And they just call themselves The County.
Mm-hmm.
And I know all of them pretty well.
Okay.
You have really good, talented musicians. They got a good sound. And their singer is Brock Witt, and he's a DJ on J104 up here in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Really good singer.
Oh, I'd love to hear some of your music sometime.
I'll get your address, and I can send you some MP3s through Facebook.
Yeah, I know.
Instant gratification or however you want to look at it, pain and suffering.
Yep. And you should let me know next time you guys are playing. Maybe I could come by.
Okay, I surely will. We'll keep in touch through Facebook.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nope.
Well, thanks very much. We can go have some lunch.
I really appreciate my wife for tolerating me. Because it's all these years, you know, it's something to tolerate a musician.
Yeah.
Because I've done things like we'd be at a drive-in theater and I get a call from a snack bar and I think, well, I got to. Somebody in my family's died. They call my name and tell me something snack bar. I got a phone call and I go, oh, that must be something bad, really bad. And I'm just praying all the way to the snack bar. And then I get down there and they go, we need you to come and play bass for us tonight, you know. And I say, I'm at the movies, you know, with my wife. Yeah, we know, you know. And so I just go off and leave her, you know. They come in to the entrance and pick me up. I'd walk over and just leave her sitting at the movie and go play music, you know. So it's really, you know, I'm just really appreciative of her that she tolerated me through all these years. And but I can't, I also can't say and there's something not say and how thankful I am that the Lord saw fit to help me out and save my soul. And in spite of who I am, in spite of all the things that soul.